When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jonathan Zapp with us, author, philosopher, journalist, teacher, has written extensively on psychology and contemporary mythology. He presented his work at the Society for Scientific Exploration and the International Association for Near-Death Studies. A couple of his books include Crossing the Event Horizon and Parallel Journeys. Jonathan, welcome back. How have you been?
Very good. Doing some exciting new things.
Good for you. You always are.
Well, I try, and it makes life interesting when you do that.
Yep, it sure does. Tell me your thoughts on artificial intelligence. What is AI to you?
Well, it is a fundamental breaking point in human history and something that holds out possibilities of evolutionary transformation, but also a high probability of extinction of the species as we know it.
Oh, no.
So it's kind of like the beginning of Charles Dickens' novel, A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Or, as Sophocles said, nothing vast enters the sphere of mortals without a curse attached. So it's this paradox of light and dark. And really, it was something that I began thinking about and working on in 1978 when I discovered something I called the singularity archetype. The movie 2001 and the book were a key part of probably the best single manifestation as a work of art of the singularity archetype. So I was aware of that film from the late 60s. And, of course, in that film, you see a kind of competition. It becomes a zero-sum game, survival game, between the last surviving astronaut, Bowman, and the HAL 9000 computer. And what my work on the singularity archetype that I discovered when I was 20 years old in 1978 revealed is that we were approaching a time when the survival of the human species would be threatened. Something would threaten the whole genome, and that might be the sufficient evolutionary pressure to cause a quantum evolutionary shift. And that shifted state had definable characteristics like visual telepathy, and a change in our relationship to time, self versus other, and other fundamental core human attributes. But it was always seen as something extremely perilous. And so now, though I've resisted people in the past who thought we were in that zone right now, you know, Art Bell wrote a book in 1983 called The Quickening, but now I think it's irrefutable that we are in that zone, because we have created we've never had a technology that could be its own agent with its own intentions. And so, in effect, we've created another species that's rapidly evolving and metamorphosing much faster than the human species is, and it could hold the seeds for our doom, because it's just counterintuitive to believe that we could make a species that, could have a billion times the cognitive firepower of the human species, and yet that we would be in control of it rather than it controlling us. We just don't see that in the natural world. You know, it'd be like if termites decided they wanted to get the human species to do their bidding.
Yeah.
So it's creating a tremendous pressure on us. We are already living in the science fiction novel right now, because AI, and now I'm just talking about the weak or narrow AI, the algorithmic AI that's being used to control social media, is already dominating the planet. It's creating collective psychosis on both the left and the right. It's destabilizing our social structures. It's causing a rash of, you know, suicides in adolescents. It's causing, it may cause a civil war in this country. So AI is already dominating our lives, and that's just the weak stuff. But we are now entering the era of where deep fakes are exploding, and where very soon we will no longer be able to tell what's real and what isn't. And we are already living in this kind of post-factual age where people, you know, are getting their news from social media, where they're being led down rabbit holes, and then everything they get in their feed is like sucking them further into that rabbit hole or state of political polarization. So it's already dominating our lives, but at right now we're at the brink of where we may be about to create AGI, artificial general intelligence, and when that is loose, then we will see the change will just keep exponentiating. So everything about our lives and everything that it meant to be human, we're now at a breaking point of continuity with the past. And that's why nobody is able to predict what the world will look like even in 10 years. And as far as like the evolution of AI, most people are not able to predict. There may be a few people, maybe Sam Altman of, you know, OpenAI knows,
yeah.
But we don't know where it will be 6 months from now. You know, there are scenarios, you know, because there's all this stuff, you know, Elon Musk is suing OpenAI right now. Their deal was set up where their connection to Microsoft, the largest tech company on the planet, would end once they created AGI. And part of Musk's lawsuit is to say, well, they've already created AGI, and therefore Microsoft, that's reaping all the benefit of ChatGPT-4, that, you know, this is not a valid contract anymore. It's a complicated lawsuit. But we already may be in a situation where, you know, there are rumors that OpenAI may have already created AGI. And then you could have a scenario where once you have an AGI that is allowed to write its own code, it could do that tens of thousands of times a second and create a rapid gain of function scenario where it could suddenly become far more powerful. On the other hand, we don't know if that will happen or if it will turn out that there are technical barriers that may take years to cross, and it will hit a kind of developmental plateau and not grow as quick as we thought. Like, you know, like quantum computing is potentially infinitely powerful, but it has huge technical barriers where you need absolute zero, and it's super sensitive to the tiniest perturbations in its environment. So you can't put a quantum computer in your pocket like you can a classical computer, like, you know, supercomputers we all have in our pockets called smartphones. So we don't really know, even its short term, even the greatest technical experts out there don't know where it's going to be even 3 months from now, because there's also a lot of closed door work happening in China and Russia and other places, and we don't know what they're up to. So it's really in a situation of like infinite wild card at the moment.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm amazed, Jonathan, at how technically AI has been soaring from just computer chips and little technical gadgets. It's truly remarkable, though.
Well, I have to say, I was blindsided because, you know, I grew up listening to people like Marvin Minsky, the great godfather of AI from MIT. And, you know, even in 1970, he was saying we think AGI is like 6 months away and stuff like that. And so I thought it was one of these things that would always be 10 years out and that was always being overpromised and so forth. But it wasn't until an extraordinary set of synchronicities happened to me that came to really where it became really scary and where we discovered that, you know, we were all living in a science fiction novel. Basically what happened, I covered some of this last show, but just very briefly. In 2013, well, after I discovered the singularity archetype...
And what is, explain very briefly what singularity archetype is, Jim.
Well, what it is, you know, archetypes are these great primordial patterns and agencies that shape the human psyche, like the hero, the devil, the trickster, and so forth. Now, the singularity archetype is an archetype that mediates and defines two great parallel event horizons, personal death, and a quantum species evolutionary metamorphosis. And these are kind of like parallel because the life of the individual and the life of the species parallel each other, just like with a fractal or a hologram where the small part recapitulates the whole. So everything that the singularity archetype projects as a future evolutionary development, like a networked telepathic visual telepathy and so forth, these are all things that are phenomenological actualities in near-death experience. When people actually have these death experiences, called NDEs, where they may meet every clinical definition of death, all the things that are the singularity archetype points to as the future metamorphosis of the species actually happen to the individual. So the when I discovered it and wrote a philosophy honors paper about it, people can read it on my website, it's called Archetypes of a New Evolution, in 1978, I was kind of given a commandment by like this massive intuition. You might as well have been the voice of God or something, that the way for me to really explore it and to express it to others would be to write a fantasy sci-fi epic about it and explore it with more imagination, to be more bi-hemispheric. This is also a theme of the singularity archetype. You know, I was kind of a very intellectual thinking type, and I needed to get both hemispheres firing. So it took me 45 years to complete that book. Now, in 2013, I was walking from, I had some very strange experiences the first time I went to Biosphere 2, that's a real 3.2-acre facility in Oracle, Arizona, completely sealed architecture where you could have a complete ecosystem self-sustaining inside of it to support human beings, something we would need for space travel. And the first time I went there in the 90s, I had the most unexpectedly emotional experience. It was as if I could remember lifetime inside that facility. And I thought I must be picking up on the lifetimes of the actual Biospherians that were in there in 1991. When I read all of their books, I realized that was not the case. They were not people I would have gotten along with or felt emotionally connected to. So in 2013, I finally went back, and in the five-minute walk from my car to the front entrance, a whole complex scenario downloaded in my mind, what was to become book one of Parallel Journeys, which contains four books in one volume. And it involved two characters sealed inside the biosphere because of a viral plague created by an AI. And the AI, you know, a human-assisted AI, human-programmed AI, had created a self-mutating virus that made the whole species extinct, and the U.S. government could only find two people who were immune to it. So 10 years later, when I finally got it finished, that's when suddenly, at the same time the book is coming out, ChatGPT-4 is startling everybody by the sudden gain of function of AI that's like, you know, looks almost like weak AGI.
Yeah.
And then what I discovered when I started researching AI is that the exact scenario that I envisioned without any real technical knowledge in 2013 is something that some of the top people, leaders of, you know, DeepMind and Google X, Mogat Watt and Mustafa Suleiman and some others were warning about the exact scenario that even as of like 3 years ago or something, a person with the psychology of a school shooter but with some training in biology, could get a $20,000 desktop gene editor and create gain-of-function novel pathogens that could kill a billion people or
God.
Plausibly cause the species to become extinct. And there's nobody that has a refute that. You know, these are just known possibilities. People just don't want to think about them. But this is a game-over scenario possible right now. Fortunately, the demographic of angry young men who can buy an assault rifle and learn how to pull the trigger is much, much larger than those that have $20,000 to buy a gene editor and the technical knowledge to know how to use it, but it only takes one. So when I discovered that this novel that I was instructed to write basically in 1978 already looked potentially prophetic, I realized I better start writing about AI, because this is, you know, was always part of the singularity archetype. Now it looks like we're in the singularity zone, and it's time to kind of try and bring that word out there. And, you know, not that other people aren't, but my work on the singularity archetype gives some unique perspectives. And some of those perspectives are positive, too, because the idea of the singularity archetype is that what will seem apocalyptic to the human ego It's just like the same as with death, because the singularity archetype relates to the parallel event horizons of death and evolutionary metamorphosis. To the ego, death looks like emergency, but to what Jung called the self, which is like the transtemporal totality of the whole psyche, it looks like emergence. Similarly, this evolutionary metamorphosis to the ego looks like apocalypse in the worst sense of that word, but from the point of view of the self, from a cosmic transcendent point of view, it looks like an evolutionary metamorphosis. Doesn't mean that the ego is wrong, because from the point of view of the ego that's trying to survive in a, you know, a physical body, death is an emergency, and the evolutionary metamorphosis could involve a new species that just replaces us. So things look better or worse depending on like how far you want to zoom out, but it can be both.
Jonathan, in 1977, something strange happened to you at the age of 19. What happened?
Well, one thing that happened, a couple of things happened in 1977. One of them was I got to have lunch with and interview John Motchley, who was formerly a professor at the tiny college I went to in Pennsylvania, Ursinus College, and it turns out that he's the father of the electronic digital computer.
He was way ahead of his time, wasn't
right.
he?
Right. So the year before I discovered the singularity archetype, I'm meeting the guy who's created the world's first digital electronic computer. Now, to give you an idea of the growth of computers, the first computer he created, ENIAC, had 18,000 vacuum tubes. It had 5 million hand-soldered joints. It weighed 30 metric tons. It was like 300 feet long. You know, I could go on and on. But it could do something that no human being could do. It could do 300 mathematical operations a second. Okay, but now sitting right in front of me is my iPhone 15 Pro Max, which has just one of the chips inside of it, the A17 Bionic chip, the first consumer 3-nanometer chip, has not 18,000 vacuum tubes. It has 25 billion with a B transistors, and it can do 35 trillion operations a second.
Way more powerful than that computer he created.
Right, right. You know, and before I went to Ursinus College, I went to the Bronx High School of Science, which was famous for having 7 Nobel Prize winners in physics, but was also famous because it had its own computer, which was considered the first high school in the world to have its own computer donated by IBM. That's how rare computers were. Watson, the founder of IBM, said that in the future there might be a market for 4 or 5 computers in the whole world. So he was a little bit far off. So now we've lived through the computer revolution, and we've seen computers become, you know, that's a place where science fiction has really, over-fulfilled its promise. Like when it came to space travel, if you told me when I was an adolescent, we won't even have gone back to the moon in 50 years, I would have been stunned and horrified and disappointed. So space travel hasn't gone very far. But if you told me that I would have a computer in my pocket that would be, you know,
more powerful,
100 million
than
times powerful than ENIAC, you know, that would have, you know, totally astonished me. So it's computers that have really been the force of novelty. But now that they've crossed over into becoming their own entities, you know, we've had major technological breakthroughs, the printing press, you know, all these different things, but the printing press didn't write its own books.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my six decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.